Okay.
Let's jump into Yeshua chapter 6.
We're coming and we're conquering Jericho. We're coming and we're conquering Jericho. The first thing that I want to do when talking about the conquest of Jericho is let's talk about the procedure that's presented for conquering Jericho. On the most simple level, we have to break through the walls. And I think that it's a clear metaphor of, I mean, it's not even a metaphor. These are the walls that are the barrier between us and Eretz Yisrael. We need to break through these walls to get into the land. Then we can start the conquest. We're going to take a short detour for a couple of chapters because not everything goes as planned at the very beginning. But then the whole conquest kind of happens really quickly in a few chapters of the entire land. This is the wall that's standing between us and getting into the land. This wall of Jericho. So the question is, how does God present for us to break through this wall? What's the procedure? What's happening? Shot level.
Circling.
There's definitely circling going on. How many times?
One per day
for 7 days, and then seven times on the seventh day. Seven is going to be a very important number for this parak. Good. Let's talk about the procedure. What does it look like? Come on. 1 o'clock. What does the procedure look like? What's the layout? Who's standing where?
The front center.
We've got a front guard of soldiers in the front. We'll put S for some sort of soldiers, a front guard, or we can call it a front guard, right? What else?
The Aron's in the middle.
We've got the Aron in the middle. What's in front of the Aron? Got the Kohanim back again. Don't worry, we didn't forget about them. We didn't forget about them at the Yardin. They came with us with the Aron. They're not leaving the Aron behind. We've got the Aron over here. And we've got the Kohanim. Good. And what else do we have? There's one last piece.
The back guard.
The rear guard. What's the one piece that we're missing here? What's the one object, which is also seems to be very central to the story?
Shofar.
The shofar. So, every single day we're going on a rotation around the walls of Jericho one time, very specifically with a front guard, the Aron and the Kohanim and a rear guard. Then on the seventh day we're going around seven times. Before we even get to the circling, let's talk about this framework. What is this framework tell you, and all I'm asking you to do is to plug in again concepts we've seen before, we're watching them actualize. What does this structure tell us? Of a front guard of soldiers, a rear guard of soldiers, and in the middle of them, the Aron, led by the Kohanim. Conceptualize it.
Meaning the Aron is the most important?
Not only is it most important, use a more literal word.
Center.
Central, or center, yes? We're going to fight a physical war to conquer the land. And you might think that it's the front guard that's going to win you the war. And you might think it's the rear guard that's going to keep you safe. But what does all of the wars that we're about to go into revolve around? The Aron, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God's presence in your midst. If God is with you, you will win. If God is not inside of you, you will not win. It's about the Aron and the Kohanim, the purity that they bring. The Kohanim is the bastions of Torah and Kedusha. We talked about as Vayikra as Torah Kohanim, which talks the whole Sefer is about Kedusha. And the Aron as the embodiment of the Torah. All standing in the center, teaching us, we're about to go and fight, but for 7 days you're going to be reminded that the essence of the fight is the Aron. What else is playing a role? Our shofar. What is our shofar doing? What does our shofar think? What does the shofar remind you of?
Teshuvah.
Lord. Waking us up.
Well, teshuva is more of a later concept, even though it does exist even within Chumash already, but yes. Even before teshuva. Well, yeah, yes. Lord. I mean, there's no actual blowing of shofars then, but we associate with it. Forget pre-associating. Literally, where does it come? So war is certainly one of them. Where else do we see it, though? Chumash. Where are there tremendous shofar blasts?
Har Sinai
at Matan Torah. That's the first time we see a relationship to the shofar. We're crying out with the shofar. The shofar is going to win us the war. The Torah being at our center is going to win us the war. The Kohanim crying out with the shofar are what's going to win us the war. These are constantly reminding them what it's about. Now, where else does a shofar come up? Also on a Chumash level. Tshuva and Rosh Hashanah also is involved. We'll get to that in a second. Where else does the shofar show up? And the words are a giveaway. What comes after the word shofar consistently in this chapter? Other shofar-oriented word?
Yovel.
Where else do we see the shofar in on a Chumash level? Yovel and Shemitah. The Shemitah and Yovel discussions all include discussions of shofar. What is Shemitah and Yovel about? The fact that God truly owns the land, even if you think you own the land.
Seven.
Cycles of seven, and seven times seven leading to 49.
Yovel.
All of it's coming back around. When we get to Yovel, what has happened on a Yovel that's unique only to a Yovel? Slaves get freed, and even more than that, what happens to the land? Keep land focused. Who's the original owner of the land of Eretz Yisrael?
God,
who can give it to whoever he wants, and who's he going to give it to? The Jewish people, as determined by his Torah, if you follow his Torah. So we've got our Shofrot HaYovlim. It's screaming out, literally and figuratively. We've got our Shofrot HaYovlim, which are reminding us to get in touch with Yovel. To get in touch with the idea that the land belongs to God. Even though you're going to go and conquer it now, it's not really you. You're not the one conquering it. It's because God's in your midst, and it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to me, and I'm giving it to you. If you keep all that in mind, it's going to go. That's what you need to keep in mind in order to break through the walls. Now watch what happens with the procedure. Let's move away from shofar. Let's move away from the arrangement. And let's now talk about the number seven, which is clearly at the centerpiece of this procedure and of this war. What is seven often referred to as symbolizing? Right, we talked about it in the Chumash Shirim, that should have been, you aren't even in the Chumash Shirim. The Chumash Shirim, people should have jumped up and with an answer immediately, right? We talked about seven extensively in the Chumash Shirim, but yes, completion. Bereshit is done in 7 days. And so seven becomes the paradigmatic number, the core number of a full, complete process. Anything that is in a full, complete process is going through a process of seven. Seven times seven, which we don't get a full sense here, but we get a hint to it by seven times on the seventh day, is a sense of everything that ever was, is, or could be. Seven is everything that is right now. Seven times seven is everything that ever... It expands the scope of that seven to everything that was, is, or could be. When we circle seven times, and this is something which is very cool when I thought about it, what does it mean to circle seven times? Seven is everything that is in this moment. Embodying the concept of seven being not only everything that is in that moment, but everything that could be, all aspects of the thing, we don't just do seven times the thing, because that gives us a plane, that gives us a vector. We transform that vector into a circle to get the seven from every single angle. The totality of it. We're totally blasting through the walls of Israel from every aspect of every angle. We're coming through it from every way that we can. The concept of circling comes up three times, to my knowledge, three times in Judaism. Where are we familiar with the concept of circling outside of Jericho? Let's do it in English. Outside of Jericho.
Wedding.
What?
A wedding.
Good, wedding. Timely. Hoshanot. And Jericho. But Hoshanot is where it happens. We don't do it on... Hoshanot and Jericho. Bear with me here. I'm going to introduce a new concept and we're going to watch how it plugs in. According to Sefer Yetzirah, there are three levels of reality. Sefer Yetzirah is one of the most ancient Kabbalistic texts that we have. Sefer Yetzirah defines reality as having three dimensions. The scientific world has found two, it will never find the third. Those three levels are, as it refers to it, Olam, Shana, and Nefesh. We would translate that into space, time, and soul. Olam is space. Shana is time. And nefesh is soul. What I suspect is that each of these three encirclings are all about breaking down walls on one of these three levels. What level are we breaking down at a wedding? Nefesh. The barriers that exist between myself and the other person. There's an encircling seven times to break down all barriers from every side. Every semblance of being that is part of who I am, I want to break down the barriers between myself and that other person to become one, to totally join. Hoshana, which is a little bit trickier, for those of you who are going to be here for Simchas Torah, we're going to talk about this at length. It will change your Simchas Torah. After Mincha, the first night, between Mincha and Maariv on the first night of Yantif, tomorrow night. I should prepare that today. Tomorrow night. It's one of the most important shiurim that I give all year. It's directly from my Rebbe Rav Amos. I adapted a little bit, but I don't know how anybody can go through life without knowing this, the concept in that shiur. Hoshanot, take my word for it for now, are actually breaking down the barriers of Shana, of time. There's a flavor of the end of days throughout Sukkot. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. But if you look at the Haftarot, the wars of Gog and Magog, the way that the Mefarshim talk about what Sukkot is about living in a bubble of Kedusha, the way that it relates to the end of days, there's a lot of end of days-ness underlying all of Sukkot as the end of all of the Moadim Doraita, signifying the end of the process. Go with it for now. Which leaves Yericho as breaking down which barrier? Not surprising. Olam, space. What we're doing here is going around in a circle seven times to break through the literal wall of Yericho, which is the barrier that's keeping us out from Kedusha on an Olam level, which is Eretz Yisrael. Kedusha on an Olam level is defined as Eretz Yisrael. It's a land of Kedusha. And to get through it, we need to go around seven times. We need to totally encompass every aspect of it and totally knock down the walls from every aspect of Olam in order to enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael in order to go and conquer it. And we need to do that by blowing the shofar, reminding us of Matan Torah, keeping the Aron at the center and remembering that the Aron and the Kohanim are at the center. And when we go through, if you want to throw in, Ricky, also the Rosh Hashanah levels, the idea that this is the beginning of the conquest of the land, coming back to the idea of Rosh, our Rosh Hashanah, where we blow the shofar. Yom Kippur, we talked about a sense of tshuva being essential to coming into the land. We had the word shenit and lashuv in the previous chapter in Parakeh. Where else is tshuva emphasized even in this parak, based on how we discussed Parak Bet? Way too many psukim wasted on Rachav, who we said is the essential aspect of tshuva that's necessary to get into the land. She needs to make it out of Yericho. She can't be destroyed. She can't be consumed by Yericho. Because I think that's also coming back to the shofar, the Rosh, and the tshuva aspect that you brought up, Ricky. Tshuva needs to remain. Tshuva needs to be present and available to us throughout this process because we're going to make mistakes. See the next chapter. We're going to make mistakes. And we need to be able to bounce back. So tshuva is removed from that and held with us and by us in the form of Rachav, who then marries Yoshua. Yeah? Then we finish the cycles and we come through. That's, I think, what's happening here in terms of the actual breaking through the walls and being able to go forward and begin the conquest. Thoughts, reflections on what's happening in Perek Vav? Yes?
So we were just saying about Rachel, how like she kind of like broke through those barrier kind of things. But like, why does it keep referring to her as Rachel? She's like not that person anymore.
I suspect to emphasize for us how far she's come in the same way that it did in Parak Bet. The fact that tshuva is so essential to the process of you having coming out of the desert and to become the nation you've become, and to always remember that that's part of the process in terms of constantly moving closer and closer to God, even if you move farther away. You can always come back. We need to, of anything that existed in Canaan, the only thing that we needed to salvage was Rachav, who embodies tshuva. If you want to get even more specific and more explicit, I think it needs to be Rachel Azona. The way that another term that the Torah refers to Azona is, does anybody know, very oddly? A Kedesha. Says Rashi, why is Azona called a Kedesha? Because she's singularly focused and dedicated to Znus. It takes a Rachav who was, as we discussed in Perek Bet, totally dedicated to something but Tum'ah, to teach us the lesson of being totally dedicated and then taking that energy and putting it in the right place, which comes back to our national circumcision, our national circumcision, our Brit Milah, which was in Perek Hay. But she's the embodiment of it, and she needs to be, she's the good that existed in Yericho. She's the good that existed in Canaan. She's the only piece that we need to save before we go to demolish everything in the land and take it over as a land of Kedusha, from a land of Tumah to a land of Kedusha. She's the only redeeming quality. She has to be saved. Because she's the embodiment of that concept to the extreme. She lived in Canaan. She was the embodiment of the Znus of Canaan. She was a Kedesha, so to speak. And now she needs to become Kadosh, just like we do. So she gets removed, surgically removed from the system, and saved before those walls come down, before we penetrate and go through. Excellent question. Good?
Good.
I think that's it for Parakeh and Vav. We'll move forward, Bezrat Hashem, into the land, really go into the land next week.